This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboys Talksplode with Charles Soule and Joe Mulvey.
This is my hour, I'm never going to bed. The sky's still black, but begs to be red. I just put my book down, but it begs to be read. I'm not nod, I'm not nap, I never rest my head. Some days I feel I'm getting smaller and smaller, but some nights I seem to grow taller and taller. You can keep shrinking and shrinking, but this will not finish.
Hey, this is Josh Flanagan from iFanboy.com, and this is, believe it or not, an iFanboy Talksplode. I'm here with a couple of comic book creators who made their bones making comics their own way. I don't know what you would do with a bunch of bones after you make comics like that, but that's how it works these days. I'm here with Charles Soule.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me again.
It's good to talk. You may have been the last person I did this with, but I checked and that was over a year ago.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah, so well, it's nice to be back.
Well, that was a lot's happened in that year, as I understand.
Accurate.
I don't follow much anymore. So.
Sure.
Also with me is Joe Mulvey.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Joe. You are known to me and others for working on Scam, and I have known you because you were sort of part of the iFanboy community for a while. Can you just like where did you come from? Where did you start with all this stuff?
I think that's way too long a story to get into briefly, but out of college, I got a portfolio looked at by like a toy developer. Mm-hmm. So I got that picked up, and then from toy development, it was very closely connected to comics. And then from comics, I started writing an article online about people who don't really know what comics are, and I was kind of giving people books who have never seen comics before. Like, people think, you know, comics are like Superman or Batman, and I gave them like Scalped and their mind was blown. And from those articles, Tyler James, the editor-in-chief of Comics Tribe and publisher, reached out to me, saw some concept stuff I was doing on my website for Scam, and lo and behold, 2 years later we have the series complete, and now we're kickstarting the Ultimate Collection online.
Yeah. And I'll full disclosure on this. I have a story in that book. I've got a little seven pager. And you know, listen, it's good that you guys know about it. We'll mention it again at the end. But what I think was interesting. So that was your first. That was the first thing you did, like as for sort of a complete comic book story. And you wrote and drew it.
Yeah, yeah, that saw print. I mean, I had gotten a lot of stuff. Like, I used to poke around DeviantArt and what was the other one? Digital Webbing, and put some stuff up there. And then you get the people who were like, oh, you know, I have the next Walking Dead idea. I have the next, you know, any Brian K. Vaughan type analogy people can make idea, you know. And then they'd say, oh, I want to pay you, you know, X amount a page. And when you're hungry and young, you're just like, yeah, man, you want to pay me that amount to draw? Sure, I'll do it. And then you're like, okay, that book never came out. And there's a few guys who are doing well in the industry right now that we have kind of stories from the same kind of people trying to, you know, shackle us in or doing stuff together. But that was pretty much my first thing was Scam.
Now, see, that's interesting you say that, because when you talk about guys who come along and they try to make a book, and the vast majority of people don't follow through, don't finish it, don't put something out. And one of the things that I've always sort of admired about Charles is that like if you I feel like if you say you're going to do a thing, you put your mind to it and you do the thing. Like, you've been really committed to the comics that you've been doing. Is that, you think that's just a, was that a thing where you were like, that's just what you're like, or if I'm going to make it in comics, then I'm going to have to just nail the shit out of all this stuff?
I think if, you know, and I started off with the idea of like, I don't want to be beholden to anybody, because I think once I started really getting into the idea of doing comics and working for comics, doing stuff for the big two didn't grab me as much as doing stuff that I controlled. And then the stuff I would see that really that I dug, that I like had copies that I wore out, was actually like Charles's 27. I love that book.
Like, thank
and
you.
Yeah, man, that book was on my coffee table, and I would have to get like 4 or 5 different copies, because buddies would just come over and I would give them the quick pitch of the idea, and a lot of my buddies are musicians, so they would pick it up and I would never see it again. So, you know, like, to me, it just seemed that it was an easier hook to people who didn't read comics to give them Image or Oni or, you know, outside the mainstream books, because I think as popular as Big Two books are, you know, the continuity, even though I know with relaunches and stuff, the continuity becomes almost like too convoluted or too burdensome for new readers to jump onto. Whereas, you know, you tell somebody what East of West is, you tell someone what Letter 44 is, and, you know, they can gravitate towards it. I mean, I guarantee you 9 out of 10 people that walk by our convention table, our Comics Tribe convention table at shows, and they look at Scam and they say, what's that? And I say, Ocean's 11 meets the X-Men, superpowered con men on a heist. And all of a sudden it's like, oh. And, you know, a 10-second sentence, and boom, they're hooked. So it just got into my idea. My mindset was going to be that if I could do everything, at least then I wouldn't be like other people I knew, and I'm not going to name names, and it's not even that it's their fault, but a lot of people are like, I just didn't get this break, I didn't get that break. I was like, if I could do it all, then I either have no one to take the success or failure but myself. So I just kind of wanted to be the complete all-around creator.
Charles, when I think you've finished a lot of stuff, you've sort of pushed a lot of things through, you know, was it always... Like, have there been projects that you just didn't finish, that you just abandoned, you got tired of, or whatever, or did you, or because I feel like that's not you.
No. basically, everything I've started, I've finished. Whether that's a script or, you know, or you know, getting it through to the final thing. I mean, there are things that aren't. That aren't out, that are in script form still. But basically, if I have an idea, if it gets me past, if I'm past the point where I think it's solid, then it ends up existing in one form or another eventually.
I mean, is that something about, is that you, or is that like, in order to make this work in comics, like that's how it has to be, or some combination of both of those? You know what I'm saying? Because like, I think that when we talk about making comics, you know, getting into it, I mean, the one thing that I... The only connecting tissue that I see between people who make it is that you can't half-ass. You have to go full on, and you have to do it and finish and stick to it. So, I mean, I guess that's just a thing you seem to do pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm the more that I do this, and particularly in the state I am now with like a bunch of stuff going on, I realize that I'm OCD about it, which is. Great in this particular context. There are many contexts in which it would be terrible, but I have a real problem like not finishing things. Like there's a buddy of mine who's a DJ, and probably 10 years ago, he's like, you know, why don't you make some track like a club and it'll be cool. And I also do a lot of music stuff, like, you know, writing and composing and playing and so on and so forth. And I never did that. I got too busy at the time, and I never actually wrote those tracks. And I've regretted that ever since. Like, that is one of those things that, like, bothers me when I'm, like, laying awake at 4 a.m. or whatever. So I am a guy. Yeah, 10 years ago. And so I'm a guy who that sort of thing really bothers. So I don't like, you know, opportunities that I don't follow through on. And whether those are ones that I generate for myself or ones that other people give me, I like to see things through.
So Joe, do you have sort of the same affliction? And the reason that I'm going after this question is because I feel like to be successful in comics, and that, by the way, is a very loaded term. It can mean all sorts of things, especially if you drill it down to creator-owned and independent comics and stuff like that. But I feel like there's a yeah, you have to have a kind of drive. And like, I know that Joe, I've seen you talk about you don't sleep. I know you've got a little kid, and you've got to make these comics, and you know, do you have that too? That weird sickness.
Yeah, and the worst thing is, you know, like when you can work from home, you're just like, you know, I sleep probably like between 3 and 5 hours a night, most nights, and then like once every 10 days, I'll pass out for like 10-12 hours. Like you could have a gunfight over my head, I wouldn't wake up, and it's just this idea of like, I can do it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, someone wants me to do, you know, an 8-page story. Yep, I could do it. Oh, someone wants me to do some covers. Yep, I could do it. You know, like there's no reason not to. Only if it interests me. You know what I mean? Like if someone asks me to do something that I'm not interested in, I'll very politely, or maybe sometimes not politely, say no. But beyond that, like it's just this thing of, yeah, like, and especially I don't really feel it in a lot of other things. Like I don't necessarily feel it with like housework or stuff like that, but when it comes to comics, you know, it's especially comics, like you said, like forget about even success, just the workload of it. Like I mean, Charles's amount of writing is just absolutely ridiculous for me to comprehend, how he juggles everything and, you know, gets it all out beyond good quality and on time, and all, it's ridiculous. He has to be cloned. But like to me, I just have to get stuff done. Yeah, I mean, I would say, and I've had this argument on Twitter a lot, it becomes a compulsion, especially I think with comics, because you're like, if you're not getting better and you're not getting stuff out there, someone else will try to take that spot. So I don't know if it's necessarily from a point of compulsion or competition.
Hmm. It's interesting because I don't tend to think of comics people as necessarily competitive, but I think that as I look at it, you kind of have to be. It more than almost anything. And also because, you know, relatively speaking, there's not a ton of reward, say monetarily or sort of lifestyle wise. You know, you're just going to get more work. You know, but I don't know, maybe there's a thing. Is, I mean, Charles, do you feel that? Also, Charles, you switched to the phone now, so that's why you're going to sound different. Do you have a competition with others or competition with yourself, or you know, what drives you to do that?
I think that feeling competitive with others is a road to failure and bad feelings, because frankly, you know, there are always going to be people who are doing things that you think you could do or should be doing or anything like that. And it, you know, when I was coming up, like there were people who I considered my peers, people who had like Image books at the same time I did, who got their big two break before I did or whatever it was. And, you know, if you put yourself in a position where you're, you know, like not liking them anymore, like not liking your friends because they're doing better than you are, then it like it comes out, like people can feel that. And frankly, one of the ways that you get jobs in this business is because your friends recommend you for stuff. And so, you know, it's a combination of like life is better if you're just happy, generally speaking. And so I don't consider it competition with anyone else. I absolutely consider it competition within the like sort of the business at large, I guess. Like I certainly want to rise to the top. But it's also mostly competitive. I'm mostly competitive with myself. Like I don't want to feel like I'm half-assing things. I don't want to feel like, you know, I'm on all these books and all of a sudden like they start to suck. You know, I want to make sure that if I'm taking on a job, there's a reason for it. It's not just, you know, can I do 8? Can I do 9? Can I do 10? Which I can't. So, you know, I think being jealous is a real killer in this business, and I know people who kind of are like that, and you can, like, every conversation you have with them tends to be like, they start bitching about people, and you're like, dude, I don't even want to talk to you anymore, and that must flow through to editors and you know, everyone who could potentially help them out. Like, you don't want negativity. It's a tough gig, you know, you want people to be positive and happy about it.
Yeah, and you could see a ton of like Twitter conversations that people have, and I'm not on Facebook or any other social media, but you could see that where people just complain about stuff, and at a certain point you're like, I don't even know why I follow you anymore. I want a quick, you know, joke, or I want something like that. But just to reiterate what I mean, like when I'm saying competition, I don't mean like competition in the sense of like getting one job over the other. Yeah, I just mean it in the sense of like if I'm not working to get myself better, it, you know, like I know my shortcomings as, you know, a creator. So it's like if I'm not sitting up going, all right, I really need to work on my lighting, and I'm not lighting a scene properly, or I'm not knowing how to do this. Like if I don't have that fuel to get better and keep pushing myself, then I feel like it wouldn't be something that I'd want to do for the rest of my life. Plus, comics are just, they're just fun. There's something about drawing them and writing them that it's just like there's this completely cathartic, you know, feeling that comes over you, and this energy to laying out a page, or, you know, writing a scene and seeing the characters bounce off each other, that just kind of fulfills you in a way.
What? I think that's right. Yep.
What's so Joe, you've got Scammed written and drawn. It's a mini. We've got all this other stuff that's going into the big book that you're doing. And so, like, what's your goal? I don't get the sense that you're a dude who's like, I can't wait to draw for Marvel. I can't wait to do that. So, you know, like, how far are you into the process of where you want to be right now? Are you there? I mean,
no, I'm not there. I don't, you know, like, I think it's still an uphill climb. But the thing is just, like, I think I want to be able to bring myself and whatever it is that's my brand to the table and my skill set. Like, I don't, you know, I've seen a lot of people burn out because they, you know, they jump on a whatever book and they just either can't do the deadline or they can't do the work, and it kind of kills their love for the medium, and it kind of kills their value to publishers or to whoever to use them. And I don't want to have to be something that's disposable. I want to be something that's kind of indisposable, and something that's kind of my own system. And that's why Comics Tribe fits for me, because with Comics Tribe I get to, you know, do the little bit of the business side where I get to look at pitches and look at other books that we could take on. I mean, we do have other books that we put out, but we have a smaller a run of books that we put out in a smaller amount, so we can concentrate on them and put every bit of energy behind them. And honestly, I think right now it's just being a creator is number one for me, but number two is also learning every facet of making comics. So I'm completely a whole package, hopefully, as a creator going forward.
Now, I'm going to turn the same question to you, but with a little spin on it, Charles, is that, I mean, for all intents and purposes, if I am a aspiring comic creator or whatever, and I would look at your career right now, I'd say, well, there, you're there. You've achieved what could be achieved, but what is it in your mind that is sort of the goal, or is there a goal? Are you just you're on this ride now?
You know, that is a good question. it's hard to like thinking about, you know, sort of you know, mountains yet to climb, so to speak, within the comics world I mean, it's tough to answer this without sounding like a little bit, you know, kind of high on myself, so to speak. And I try to stay very grounded about it, because I think the minute you start thinking that you're above things is when everything starts to go wrong. But at the same time, like, I mean, I've written high level books for Marvel and DC, which is generally something that a lot of people aspire to in the comics world. And I'm thrilled about it. I don't want to be blasé about it. It's awesome. I mean, I was working on, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, just before I got on this call. Like, it's fantastic. Like, writing scenes for, like, those icons is really, really fantastic. But, you know, ultimately, I still am doing a lot of creator-owned stuff. And for me, it's about, you know, I'm doing, there's a lot of reasons why I'm doing the Big Two stuff. I'm doing it because I want to, you know, certainly, you know, tell stories with those characters. It's fun. It's something that you do dream about since you're 11 years old, and so on and so forth. There's a lot to it. It, you know, it does pay well. Your profile grows like you wouldn't believe when you start doing that kind of work. Like, people all of a sudden care about you in a way that they didn't care about you before, which is kind of strange, because the work is still, you know, you're capable. You're doing the same things you're doing when you're doing an image book or whatever, but it's just a different thing. So, you know, Josh, you've known me for a while. You know that one of my main if I'm good at anything, it's leveraging stuff, you know? And so I see this as an extraordinary opportunity to leverage into the next set of things. And so I guess my goal now is to make sure that I can write for the rest of my life comfortably and well. And there are a lot of ways that I'm planning to do that, but it's, you know, comics will be part of it, but it's sort of a larger strategy kind of branching out, I guess.
So you're looking at, I'm not putting words, but say a Kirkman model, for example, or maybe if you look at a career of somebody like Brian Vaughn.
Yeah, I'd say Brian K. Vaughan is probably more what I'm thinking about right now. But it's, you know, but even saying that, I mean, I sound like a monster.
Well, the fact is, I've known you since just before 27 came out. And I didn't know who the hell you were back then. I know you've done a couple of projects. And that doesn't, and this is partially me, that doesn't seem that long ago. So,
yeah,
you know, in a way, like, you've it's interesting to have gone from here to there. And it's like, well, I think it's intelligent to go, well, is this it? Are we going to stop here? No, we're going to keep going. And so it's interesting to see, I guess, if you think about, like, where do we go from here? And I think that, you know, we've all seen in the industry that the way to go forward there is to come up with your own properties and your own stuff, and
yep,
that has to do with
That's
your
right.
brand. And even though you can make a career, you can make a living at Marvel and DC, and there's great things about that and everything, that only gets you so far. And so, you know, that's the part that you have to think about. I mean, was that always something that was in your mind, or is that sort of like after you get to each step, you go, okay, so where do we go from here?
I saw it as a very valuable goal, right? Like, so I knew ahead of time, because I knew friends of mine who had been there, and kind of, you know, I've always kind of, you know, I don't know, studied is maybe overstating it, but I've been very aware of the career arcs of other people in this business. And so, you know, there are people who have been able to become very successful without doing very much Big Two work. Like Mike Mignola comes to mind. Frankly, Brian K. Vaughan comes to mind. Like, he hasn't done that much. And Robert Kirkman didn't do that much. I mean, Robert Kirkman is probably not the best example, because I do feel like he built his name to a certain degree at Marvel before he kind of jumped ship with The Walking Dead and so on and so forth.
He's a strange outlier in that sense.
Yeah, I think that's right.
There's no other like him. So I shouldn't have said him in the first place, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, Kirkman is Kirkman, and he's an institution unto himself. But you look at a guy like, you know, Mark Miller, who certainly, you know, built up his kind of acclaim at doing, you know, the Ultimates and Big Two work, and then he was able to parlay that into things like Kick-Ass and so on and so forth. And so I know that there are people who have done it outside that model, but it seems like there are many more who have been able to use. I mean, it's a platform. It's a huge platform. Like, people care about Spider-Man and Batman a lot more than they care about 27, you know, for the moment. We'll see if that ever changes, but probably never will. You know, like, that's always going to be the case. And so if I can do a little work on Batman, and then all of a sudden I can be like, you know, on Twitter, when I've got my X number of followers, hey, you know, even if I'm only converting, you know, 10% of that audience, you know, the audience over to Creator Owned, it's still a worthy platform, and I feel like it was always something that seemed worth pursuing to me. Also, there's kind of hate to it and all the rest of it.
But don't you think we're at, like, a weird time where, you know, a few generations ago, the goal was just work for Big Two, and then, you know, you see all these things of, like, you know, older creators kind of having nothing to show for it and all that stuff. So there's that old fear base of, like, you don't want that to be you. You know, and now you look and you're like,
right.
You look and you just, like, especially you see the rise in the, you know, the interest and the people that are showing up for creator owned comics of any platform, be it like Boom or Image or Oni or like whoever it is, or Comics Tribe, like, people are showing up and people are giving other things a chance. So you kind of wonder, like, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot. And I kind of completely agree with the sentiment Charles said before, where it's like, you just want to be an overall good creator to where you can make the most of your name and then do whatever you want so you can create for the rest of your career and be, you know, financially sound at least.
Do you guys think
do
you guys think we're in a good time for creator owned comics? And I guess I'm coming at this from my position, I want to say 3, 4, 5 years ago. I would have said it was relatively bleak in terms of sort of what where the market was. And but something has changed. I feel like there's been some strange upswing, and I don't know if that's digital, or I don't know if that's social media, or some combination of those things. I don't know how much Kickstarter comes in with it, or just sort of the rise of Image Comics, maybe a combination of all that stuff. Where, like, is it a good time to be in creator owned comics? Maybe in and of themselves, or is there another component to it? That was a long question as I worked my way through it. But I mean, what do you think, Joe? And then so we'll talk around a little bit.
Well, I'll just say when we did the Diamond launch of Scam, because originally we had done it through just calling brick and mortar shops, seeing how many copies they'd take. We did a first like 770 print run, and when Diamond picked us up and we held off the national distribution, we took out a billboard in Vegas, and along the lines of just promoting the book, the tagline on the billboard was, "What's hot in pop culture tomorrow is in your comic shop today." And I think that, I mean, I certainly hope it. I mean, but I think that people are checking out independent and creator-owned comics, and they're seeing the medium put on display that's not in the same way it's been done for years. And I think, and this is only because of the interviews I've done with people, that comics get overshadowed as being the characters rather than the medium. Like, I make the analogy of a lot of people who don't know what comics are, you know, it's the equivalent of going to a TV, putting the TV on, seeing SpongeBob, and then shutting the TV off and saying, oh, there's only cartoons on TV. So then you walk away from the TV. Whereas if you just change the channel, there's something else for you. And that's exactly what comics are. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people from every age range come into shops, come into conventions. You know, conventions are a little bit of their own beast. It's a little different. But I think it's a better time now than ever to check out comics, because, you know, there's only so many times you can rebrand something or restart something or whatever the phrase is that I'm thinking right now, like every do-over that the companies do, before you want originality and you want something new, you know? So, I mean, I'm certainly hoping that's what it is, that it's a thirst for something new.
What do you think, Charles? I know you've seen more numbers than I have in terms of, and you don't have to go into those, obviously, but I think, you know, like around the time the 27 came out, there was an idea that, well, if you do a book, some people will read it and it'll lead to something else. But I feel like now, even a few years later, it feels like there's something that could happen with these books a little more than maybe back then. But I don't know if that's just wishful thinking.
No, it's not wishful thinking at all. I mean, the truth is, since Letter 44 came out, I would say weekly, I get maybe once every 2 weeks now, but certainly when it was first came out, I would get an email from some production company in LA or wherever, being like, you know, what's going on with the series? This is very cool stuff. Like, have you know who owns the rights and so on and so forth. So, and I've not heard of the vast majority of them, but the point is that there is a lot of focus on comics creators and comics writers, because I think we're seen as a concept farm, which is okay. You know, that's all right. And so, it's just about, make sure the deal you get is good when you sign away those concepts. But, I feel like there's an enormous amount of attention on comics as a place where cool new ideas can come from. And they almost become vetted, and a lot of like the story points get worked out and so on and so forth. So when you hand, comics are not the same thing as film or TV. Like, there's a lot of things that need to be dealt with, but you can hand someone comic and it's almost like a proof of concept. Like, this can work as a story idea, which is something that I think is happening constantly. You go to San Diego and it's like there are sharks prowling the waters looking for that next thing. I mean, I was at San Diego last year, and another book of mine that came out in this year was called Strange Attractors. And one of the characters in that book is an older guy. He's an older kind of crazy mathematician dude. And a guy came up to me. I was signing Strange Attractors at the Archaea booth, and he's like, I heard there was an old guy in this book. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. And he's like, well, I'm, Harrison Ford's agent, and we're looking for roles for him to do. Do you think this would be a good role for Harrison Ford? And my answer was, yes, I do think it's a good role for Harrison Ford. But
I can't imagine a scenario where you go, no, I'm good, thanks. push him away.
Yeah, exactly. That'd but,
be,
you know,
that would be indie comics right there.
Yes, seriously, yeah. Yeah, no, fuck that guy. Fuck Han Solo. But you know, the point is that those guys were around, and, like, he was hungry. He wanted that. So I think indie comics are very, or not even indie, but, like, comics in general are very fertile ground, particularly because, you know, Marvel and DC are owned each by Disney and Warner Brothers, so those ideas are all sort of like there's a chute that goes straight up to the top for those. So those ideas are not available. So if you're not in that, if you're not Marvel or Warner Brothers or Disney, you know, you have to find those ideas someplace else. And so they're looking at indie comics, I think.
Mm-hmm. Do you still? I mean, like, because that, and that sounds similar to, you know, for the last probably 10 years or so. Yeah, about that. You know, the great financer of a lot of non-big two comics was Options and things like that. I mean, but I feel like I want to think that people are a little more about the comics right now. Whereas for a little while, a lot of indie comics had sort of this is a movie pitch thing. Whereas now, this is a story, I guess, and they work as comics first and foremost. That just sounds like I want to almost Pollyanna. I think, you know, but immediately if I'm looking at something like Joe, what you were doing, Scam, you know, is, you know, obviously I can see the movie pitch angle, but it's very much a comic book creation, I suppose. I mean, did you approach it like that at first, or was that sort of when you were coming at it, were you like, well, this is good for all sorts of things? And by the way, it would be foolish not to think the latter.
No, yeah, look, if someone wants to offer you money, and we've been offered money for Scam a few times, and we've kind of turned it down because it just didn't feel right. And I just look at it like, you know, if someone wants to give me money, great, and I could take that money, and I could live, and I could make more comics. Because when I make a comic, like, in my mind, you know, if it's a story that's an action story, I want to make it, you know, $1 billion budget. Like, I have unlimited potential and creativity to do whatever I want within the pages of the book. So, you know, and Charles knows this first on. Like, he's doing Superman, Wonder Woman. You know what I mean? Like, you can have them, you know, making out and destroying planets. You have no, except for editorial mandate, you have no budget. So you don't have to worry about that stuff. But if, you know, a film company wants to come and give you money, hell, take it. But the one thing I was going to say about what we were talking about is I think we're kind of discounting the increase in interest in sales to, you know, the fact that everyone has a machine in their hands that they can get a comic on 24 hours a day. You know, like, a lot more people are reading comics now, and I know a lot more people are reading digitally. You know, and that's got to be a huge help to getting people to, you know, check some stuff out.
I don't know. I still don't have, because nobody ever shares any numbers on it or anything. But
I will tell you right now, from what I know and from the numbers and stuff I've seen, they are formidable.
Yeah. I mean,
and I can tell you
that,
from...
Yep, I agree with that. Yep, that's
I was just going to say,
right.
I could tell you from Scam, personally, I won't give exact numbers because I know that makes people nervous, but I will say that we've, you know, and they give you, you know, and I would go based off Comixology where you get quarterly reports. I mean, our numbers have increased dramatically. And it takes planning and stuff like that. Like this year, we'll be doing a Scam Zero for Free Comic Book Day, and that directly ties back into the idea of getting more people to check out the back trade, to check out the downloadable content, to check out the issues, and it all bleeds into one. And that digital space to sell on is very formidable because everyone can get that app, whereas everyone in, you know, however many stores. Diamond, I think, says like 4,400 in the country or 3,800. You know, they might not check out an independent book, but you know, when you get lumped together, I've been reading Letter 44, and you know, you see that, and then as soon as you finish that, you can go right to, you know, another book that you would like. I mean, it's a potent weapon for any creator.
Yeah, it's definitely. It feels a lot more. There was a little bit where it was, will comic readers go to this, or will other people who weren't comic readers become this thing? And I feel like there's definitely that momentum now, in a way that's actually really helpful because it doesn't seem to be taking away from the stores all that much, which was the big fear, I think.
It, you know what? A good retailer, you know, kind of feeds into it, because if you can get someone to check it out on a phone, then you put that book in their hands, and normally, I mean, like, and Charles is a great example. His book is printed on quality paper, and I'm talking about Letter 44, I should say that from a creator standpoint.
Right.
It's on quality paper, it looks beautiful, it's well-drawn, it's well-lettered, it's every part of the process is done amazingly. So now, when you go from looking at that on, you know, whatever the size screen is, 2.5 inches, to looking at it in your hand in a trade or in an issue, you already have the familiarity with it and the connection that you're not turned off by it. Now you're like, shit, yeah, let me see this. Let me get some other stuff. You know, like, I think it's a really good gateway drug for people to check out more comics. And good retailers know how to segue people, you know, between them.
Do you think as creators that are you marketing differently to a digital audience, or is they all sort of the same kind of thing? And
it's interesting. I mean, right now, like, I'm about to sort of launch the first kind of my own digital product, which is going to be Strongman, which was the first thing I ever did. Was volume one through SLG back in 2009. And so I had it like all relettered and kind of made it all nice because I did the lettering originally and it was just terrible. It was really, I still think it's a good read, but it was very poorly lettered by me. So I had it relettered and I...
Lettering is the worst thing that you could ever have to do on Earth, as I understand it, and from my brief experience with it. I mean, you'll do it because you should learn now if you're an indie creator, but it's going
to
hurt.
No, I agree. But there's, I guess what I would say is there's a lot of art to that particular part of the process that I was not able to achieve in my 112-page lettering escapade, which I feel like I lettered that book like 25 times because I kept so I would start on page one. By the time I got to page 112, I was like, wow, I'm so much better at page 112 than I was at page one. So I want to go back and start over and like apply these new skills. And then that loop happened like 5 times. And so I re-lettered that book over and over and over again. And by the end of it, it still looks shitty. So whatever. So God bless letterers, because I am clearly not, you know, I'm not a letterer. Anyway, but to go back to what you're talking about, I am putting up Strongman 1 and 2 on Comixology soon. They've gone through the whole submit process, and they should be good to go. But I'm very excited about that because I think it's going to be very interesting for me to see. Like, I haven't really gone through that cycle before. I mean, Joe, I know you have, but, you know, tracking it and promoting it and kind of getting people to check it out is going to be interesting for me. It's going to be one of the real tests of this platform I keep talking about because, yes, I have X number of Twitter followers and Facebook friends and people who, you know, I have this audience, but can I get them to go check out my black and white luchador action book from 2009 and then, you know, so on and so forth. So I guess we'll see, but I'm very excited to find out.
Well, that actually leads me to sort of another question that I've been thinking about. And one of the things I really like about comics and creator owned comics and that sort of ladder is that there's so many different, ways to take. Now, Charles, you've always gone through a publisher. You've worked with other companies to do it. Not that you didn't do most of it on your own. Obviously, you lettered your book 5 times. And Joe, you're working with Comics Tribe, but I feel more like you're part of Comics Tribe too. Like it's sort of a small concern that you got involved with and did it that way. So you're still doing a lot of those things. You know, what do you feel like are the advantages and disadvantages of that? I mean, do I have that right, Joe? Is that how you would describe?
Yeah. I mean, the disadvantages are like the time it takes. Like sometimes I'd like to just draw, you know, sometimes I get a script. I'd like to just sit down and be able to draw, but I can't because I have to draw for 3 hours, but then I have to review a pitch. Then I have to, you know, do edits on lettering. I have to do, you know, and we have other people that do that stuff too, but it's a small group of people that are doing it. So, you know, and then you have to get printer proofs back and you have to do all that stuff. So with the, you know, office side, you know, part of the job, then you have to balance that with the creative part of the job. But the good part of it is I don't really ever get burned out on doing one or the other because it's like, okay, I've reviewed this, I've looked over that, I've proofed this, I've checked that. Now I get to go draw or I get to go write. And that's kind of cool because I get to, you know, take it easy, but I would, you know, I always say on Twitter how I want to hire an intern just to like help me out and do some stuff because, you know, pretty much comics drivers all over phone and stuff like that, and we talk back and forth. But man, it would be nice to have some of the bigger company perks of, you know, having someone taking care of the proofs and working with the printers and making payments and doing this stuff and that stuff, but and just be creative for a little while. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's flexing a lot of different muscles, but as Comics Tribe grows and we kind of expand, it'll be nice to kind of give up some of the jobs to other people and then just be able to maybe work more on just putting out some comics.
Now, Charles, was it for you, was it a conscious decision to go through, you know, publishers and not necessarily take it all on your own? I know that you have, you know, you've got a job and you got other stuff, but sort of a lot of other people, so.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, I think I always saw that as a way that I wanted to go, mainly because I think that, you know, for better or for worse, there's a legitimacy to going through a publisher. It's not always necessary. Clearly, Joe has proven that. But for me, it just seemed like a way that would shortcut some of the work a little bit. I also am, you know, I've always been, you know, had a lot of stuff to do. You know, I do have a day job. I'm an attorney, as we've talked about before. And that, you know, that has been a factor throughout my entire time trying to break into comics. And so it was never going to be, you know, easy to spend a ton of time on kind of the marketing promotion angle. Not that publishers do tons of that necessarily as it is, but it was something. It just seemed like I could cut out some of the middleman if I ended up you know, going with a publisher. Do I see the appeal of the self-publishing route now? Absolutely. Like, I'm considering a sort of a Kickstarter project right now. And I'm actually, you know, I'm probably going to talk to Tyler about kind of, you know, he seems like he's got that stuff locked down, Joe. Like, he knows how to do that stuff like crazy. So
he is a kickstarting Yoda.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He's a machine.
I did, at this point, if anybody wants, I did a Make Comics episode with Tyler about Kickstarter a while back. And I'm sure that even since then it's evolved. But you can go back and check that out too.
I think he actually just collected all his articles on comicstribe.com as well. You know, so
those are all really, really valuable resources. I mean, I haven't read them, but I'm assuming just having talked to the guy, like, those are solid things, I'm sure. But anyway, I think that's a real, you know, now, like, for sure, I think it's absolutely a valid path. And you know, the other thing is, back when, I mean, I was trying to get things rolling in like 2006, 2007, and I think that it was, you know, the landscape is just different now. Kickstarter's changed everything. And even to the extent of even projects that aren't kickstarted are legitimized just by the fact that self-published stuff can work and can make a bunch of dough and can be out there and be in the world and so on. So,
well, let's talk about it. I mean, because, you know, Kickstarter is an interesting thing. You know, Comics Tribe depends on it to a great extent. Charles, you've done pretty much you've done everything without it so far. But we're in a different world now, and I'm still kind of dubious about it. I think there's a right way to use it, but, you know, just like there's a lot of things vying for your entertainment time and dollar, you know, Kickstarter is another one of those things where there's so many of them. You know, from doing iFanboy, we get, you know, six or seven a day. You have people who I didn't know making some comic book with Kickstarter, but it's a big part of it. You know, I mean, what do you think about it, Joe? Obviously, it's worked out well for you guys so far.
Yeah, well, I think, like, I know what you're talking about. Like, there's a lot of trepidations, and, you know, we just launched the Scam Kickstarter, and because the Comic Tribe name has the ability to successfully fund, but then the most important thing is successfully fulfill. So I think, like, the trap that gets people worried is someone coming out there and saying, I have this great idea about a superpower robot that's going to do whatever the pitch is, and then I need $6,000, and they make 10, and it's like, okay, great, we're going to do all this and all that. And then I think the biggest fail for the site is that the people who take on the responsibility don't know how to fulfill it. Like, I don't want to out who it was, but there was a pretty successful Kickstarter about a year or two ago that didn't even factor in shipping or international shipping. And then, you know, was like, you know, the creator.
I think I know exactly the one you're talking about.
Yes.
But
yes,
I'm not
going to
say either. But I know the one you mean.
I don't
want to
out the guy, but I'm just saying, you know, like, that's a business fail. And I think the part that I especially try to approach, and Tyler, you know, has definitely helped me, Tyler James has definitely helped me with, is when you're doing this, you can't go in willy-nilly. It can't be like this, oh, my creative juices are flowing, I want a random number, and I have this idea for a book. It's got to be a business platform. It's got to be a way to directly connect with your fan base, directly make new fan, like, you know, expand your fan base, reach new readers and people who haven't seen you before. And then more importantly, once you've gotten the fulfillment, hopefully, you then give the product to those people in a quick turnaround time where they assimilate you and your brand and your property with being reliable, just like any publisher. You know, like, if you make a pull list, you want your books when you get them. So Kickstarter is completely valuable, and just like Charles said, has completely changed the landscape of letting creators make what they want. But you've got to respect it and not treat it like, you know, a piggy bank where you can kind of just, you know, crack it every once in a while, take the money and not worry about putting it back in. You've got to put in the time and the effort. Because once you do Kickstarter, you're not just a creator anymore. You're not just a pencil or inker or a writer. Now you're your own businessman, and now it's your own corporation, and now you got to run it. Otherwise, you're going to fail like anyone else.
A good friend of mine, who is a very successful Kickstarter creator, he had a Kickstarter recently for a book that he put out that almost broke six figures, and he did it all essentially himself, and to the extent that, like, you know, it was so successful that he ended up with, like, his whole house was full of boxes of books, and like, he had to, you know, he lives in an apartment that doesn't have an elevator, so he had to move all those boxes up to the second floor himself because the delivery guy was like, you know, forget that, I'm not going to do it. And so, like, just, like, silly little considerations like that that he didn't, it just sort of, you know, that stuff is going to happen. And, you know, I think that there are Kickstarter sort of fulfillment services and things like that exist, but, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if and when I do one, like, I'm going to, like, I have time to hopefully, you know, execute a good Kickstarter program, but that's only, you know, it's like that whole iceberg metaphor. Like, executing the program is really only, you know, it's 10% of the actual effort involved in a Kickstarter. There's finishing the project, there's sending the books out to everybody, and that's not, you know, that's not nothing. So, and I think the problem is that if enough people don't realize that it is that businessman mindset that Joe is talking about, and then they try and do these projects, and then, you know, like, if enough stuff stops, like, doesn't work, people aren't going to invest in Kickstarters anymore, because you don't get your book, you don't get your thing, like, what the hell's the point?
Well,
so,
and also, you know, one bad Kickstarter can really poison a lot of others. I mean, it's, people don't sort of separate the two, I don't think. They're, well, this one I funded didn't work, so, you know, I'm not going to.
You know, the funny thing is, I think that my thought about that, and I feel like that is an element, but I think that there is a, if you have built up enough, like, if you screw up a Kickstarter, then you're pretty much done for Kickstarter, probably, okay, because you, like, fool me once, fool me twice, all that. But if you have built up a lot of goodwill as a creator, let's say Neil Gaiman did the Kickstarter, right? Just not picking his name randomly as a creator who's developed a lot of goodwill. No matter how bad a businessman he is, he probably could have an incredibly successful Kickstarter just based on the fact that he's Neil Gaiman. So I think that if you're a creator who has a name or has a track record of being a good creator, you can pull off a great Kickstarter, like a successful Kickstarter, even though that has nothing to do with your ability as a businessman, which, as Joe again pointed out, is really what Kickstarter is all about. So it's an interesting thing, but I guess to speak to your point, Josh, like, if people, as long as there are creators with good track records who want to do Kickstarters will remain successful. I don't think that, you know, some random person failing is going to stop me from investing in a new game on Kickstarter.
Yeah,
so
that's what you're saying. But anyway, that would also sort of hinge on the idea that you need to be somebody, where for a little while felt like you didn't. I guess, and you know,
I think it always kind of did. I mean, Joe, what do you think about that? Like, I mean, that's an interesting question.
I mean, you know what? I know I'm nobody. My wife tells me constantly I'm nobody, but I think if you put out, I think on Kickstarter, it could go both ways. Like, I agree with what Charles said. If Neil Gaiman comes out and puts out a book, he doesn't need to be the best businessman. But there's so much money that's going to Kickstarter now that you're literally having, like you said, funding services, which I've researched and, you know, I'll probably be using fulfillment services, you know, for certain levels of pledge backing, because it does alleviate, like Charles was saying, having 72,000 boxes in your house. So, you know, there are those little leg ups that as more money floods into Kickstarter, it'll help you. But I think, like, for myself, I wouldn't have just, which I didn't. I didn't just go to Kickstarter with the idea of this. I waited. I got the issue out. I showed everybody, hopefully, that, you know, I'm determined to do this. Then I went around, you know, caught Josh from the iFanboy community. I loved his writing. X'd him to do a story. X'd all these other people to do a story. So I get all their other fan bases in as well. Put a good quality book together. You know, spent a year working it, editing it, lettering it, coloring it, all this stuff with everyone from Comics Tribe. And once it was ready, then I put it out. So I think it honestly could go both ways. It could go strength of product, which I think is hopefully what I have going for us with the Scam Ultimate Collection. But I think even like a guy like Charles, I think when you put something out there, if you do, you know, I think I know just from digging your stuff, I'm backing, you know, and then show me what those other things are that I can get. You know, what can I get? You know, like, that's also the thing you have to understand. It's like a, you know, Tyler equates it a lot to like a 30-day convention where you're not just getting the book. You can get a book and a print, a book and a T-shirt, a book, and then you have interaction. So you can have, you know, if Charles wanted to do a script review, a 30-minute Skype session where you could learn from, you know, a guy like Charles, to me, is very much a guy who could market every bit of his career climb as well as just the work he's done, because it's impressive and it's you know, something to shoot for. Like, Charles is writing a book for every major company and successful at it and doesn't seem to want to kill people, which is a nice thing. So, you know, doesn't go on Twitter tirades dropping C-bombs all over the place. So why not? You have a likable creator. He puts out a good product and all that stuff, and then that's it. So I think it can be divisive and it can go both ways. I just think the only thing that'll sink you is not fulfilling.
Yeah, but you get to get away with that once.
Right, you could get away from once, but I'll tell you right now, I've seen one or two people that literally, and again, it's a similar thing we're talking about, where you burn a lot of bridges.
Oh, yeah, no, recommend it.
Oh, no, right. Like, it equates to me to theft. You know, like, okay, I'm giving you a promise. It's pretty much online con, man. You know, like, I'm promising you this great product. Ooh, I'm not going to be able to get out to you. Or, ooh, there was all these problems I didn't see happening. And sorry, I've already spent the X amount of money you've given me. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like lending money to a drug-addled relative. Like, you're like, aw, man.
You know what it is? I think people who are making comics see it as a way, it's like an ATM machine. It's pre-orders. It's a way to gauge my audience. It's a way to do this. Another way to look at it is it's taking on a tremendous responsibility.
Yeah.
Far beyond what you would say just like putting out a book with image or even by yourself or digitally or something like that. It's much bigger than that. It's starting a business. I guess that's what you said.
It's vast, especially when it comes to the completion. Mm-hmm. You know, like first of all, obviously you have to be willing to self-promote. I am shameless and I have no problem with that whatsoever, so I'm okay with it. But, you know, first you have to get it funded. That's, like you said before, I think that's like 10 or 15% of it. Because then the real work starts, where you're like, okay, now I have the money to do exactly what I said I'm going to do. Now I got to bust my ass to do that. And people just got to, you know, to realize what it is and, you know, keep their head in the game and know that, you know, you can rest once that last order goes out, once you've checked the tracking on that last order, once you know it's delivered, and once you start getting the word back from people that they're unbelievably happy with the product.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of work.
Well, it's funny because there's nothing about comics that isn't a lot of work. And it's funny because you think of this idea of, oh, that guy makes comics. Oh, that's cool. He gets to stay at home and think. And the thread that goes through everything is an unbelievable amount of work. And I'm talking to, it's not ironically, we're talking to you, Charles. And, you know, every couple of years there's a new guy in comics who is the one where you go, how the hell are they doing all that? And it's been Jeff Johns in the past. It was Bendis for a little while where you sort of count the book. And right now it's you. And I don't think I've ever talked to that guy when they were in the middle of that thing. you know, and I know you wrote a blog post recently, you know, how do I do it? Because people ask you that all the time, because it's seven ongoings, right? There's seven ongoings right now. And I'm saying that because that's remarkable.
it's a lot.
I mean,
is there a question? Because I have to go reg one like right now.
Yeah, no, I know you do. I've gone on far too long. I mean,
now you're just making him nervous.
No, I'm kidding.
Were you, I mean, have you had to reapproach how you even come at the idea of telling a story? Because this point, the sheer idea generation, that's the part that scares me. It's not the script writing. It's not the organizing. It's the, I would be terrified that I'm going to run out of ideas that are worth a damn. Is that the case? I mean, are you running out? But, you know, is that the hard part? What's going on? Tell me.
You know, I've been fortunate in that I tend to be able to get into a state that I once heard called ideaphoria, like euphoria about ideas. And so you just kind of like, once you kind of have one and you kind of, your mind locks into that state, then all this sort of stuff starts to spin. And if I can't get into that state, then that's kind of when I know an idea is a non-starter. But I'm, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, you read about, you know, I don't know, like dachshunds are bred to like go down in burrows and kill badgers and so on and so forth. And maybe, you know, everything I've done has sort of enabled me to, you know, being an attorney has given me this sort of like weird focused discipline, and reading zillions and zillions of books and seeing tons of movies has given me this kind of idea, you know, bank I can draw from as I need to. I don't know what it is. I don't know how I'm able to do it, but I am able to kind of get into the place where I'm generating new ideas relatively quickly. And I'm right now in particular, like I recognize a dramatic difference between how my mind works now as opposed to how it did, let's say, when I was working on, you know, 27. Mm-hmm. Like 27 is, you know, my image series that I did a couple years ago and it has two 4-issue arcs, and that's the entirety of 27 so far. And I remember how much time and focus and like how dramatic it was to write those issues. And now I'm at the point where I feel like I could do that, you know, I could do that in a week. Like it wouldn't even be a big deal. And I think that's also a tricky thing about this situation, because I do not want to come across as gloating about it. It's more just that my headspace has like the pathways in my brain have altered to become very fast and very, you know, being able to churn out comic strips very quickly because I don't have a choice. I mean, because of the way things work with rewrites and, you know, just various kind of things I have going on that aren't like even in the public sphere, like I tend to write two scripts a week these days. And so, if I can't get those, you know, like before this call, I was polishing, a Superman Wonder Woman script. And then I had to break stories for several issues of both Swamp Thing and Red Lanterns. So in the space of about 3 hours, I had to work through, you know, a very different set of story problems on three very, very different books. But, you know, I did it, and I'm actually pretty confident that the things I come up with will work. So how it's happening, I don't know, but I think it's more just like, you know, if you do something enough, if you get to the point where you have to generate that many scripts that quickly, everything about your mind starts to work in that way. Like whenever my brain goes idle, it tends to run to a story problem I'm thinking about. So I guess I'm this engine for creating comics right now, which is kind of a dubious achievement, but that's how it feels. You know?
Now when you go back to say, you know, when you're doing 27, that's, it's an idea and you thought of it and then you worked pretty much on that thing for a long time, and I'm gonna come to you in a second, Joe, because I think you're in a similar position to then, you know, but now, you don't really have the leisure to wait for the idea. Really, it's not like, well, I'll go for a walk, and if something pops up, that'll be good, and if not, then I can do it tomorrow. I mean, is it really just a matter of being able to really hone in and just trust those things that come to you? I mean, it's like athletics. It's like you've trained yourself to be an athlete.
Yep. You get these like twitch reflexes, and you became able to generate. Like I was on a call. I'm not going to be specific about it. Basically, I was on a call with kind of a group of editors and creators last week, and they had one. There are a lot of sort of like agenda items on the call, but one of them was coming up with, you know, the sort of the plot line for an issue that needed to be out in several months. And whatever. The point is that everyone was kind of like, everyone on the call had to have an idea ready to go, and I for various reasons had not really come up with something. Like, I had this kind of the vague shape of something. When it was my turn, which was, I was like the first guy to go, I'm like, well, this is kind of what I'm thinking or whatever. And like, the editors were like, all right, cool, man. Sort of. And then they weren't thrilled, but whatever. And then the next couple guys went and they had like,
literally talking about like the most stressful situation I can imagine. You're the first guy called, you don't quite have, it's like being not having your homework in school. That's awful.
Yeah, it was pretty much that. Like, but it was also, you know, sometimes these things are vague, so you don't know what you're supposed to deliver necessarily. But at any rate, I could tell from the reaction that, like, what I had delivered was not what I was supposed to deliver. So I listened to the next guy, and they had something that was much more kind of locked in and polished. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's what they want. And so after the third guy, I broke in. I'm like, can I, you know, I've got something else. And so in between the time that I went and those two guys, my brain gave me another idea, which is totally different. And I pitched that, and they're like, well, that's bingo, we're done. So again, this is not, I'm so awesome. This is just where my head is right now. Like, it is, seems to be able to generate that stuff very, very quickly. And thank God for that. Because if it stops, I am screwed. I am absolutely screwed.
And I don't think you could look at it as bragging, but I think that it's, you can look at it and say, you know, if you want to perform at that level, this is, you know, the practice is going to get you there. And I think that,
yeah,
I don't think it's wrong to say that having all those deadlines, having all those expectations and all those responsibilities hinging on it, it's, you know, it can either, depending on the person, it can either make you or break you in the creative process. I mean, some people can handle it and thrive.
That's
and some
absolutely
people,
right. If what I just described sounds miserable to you, then this is not, then big two work is maybe not for you, because that kind of thing happens all the time. You'll get things like, you know, you get an email at 10 in the morning, like, this is what's happening now, and then you have to deliver something really good by like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So if that sounds awful, then, you know, I guess it sounds awful, but that's what big two work is like a lot.
Now, Joe, you're approaching this. You just completed, like, is it 4 or 5 issues? But maybe it's 4, and then the fourth one's real big, I think.
Altogether it was 6 issues, but we bundled the first and the last.
Okay.
So,
I mean, so if you're listening to this, I mean, you got to work on it. Because you had to draw it, you were at a sort of more, and I use this word sort of facetiously, a more leisurely pace. And I realize that that's not really the case when you're writing the whole book but like that. But I mean, how many steps ahead are you thinking of well, what's coming next? What am I going to do next? How do I keep this going? What do I have after this thing? Are you planned out in that way?
You mean career wise or in the story?
I sort of mean not career wise, like long term, but you know, like what your next projects are going to be or what the other things are going to be, or, you know. Do you have to worry about a position where you're going to have a lot of properties and things like that?
Well, I mean, I already have planned, like, through this year is 2014's booked. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like, I know I don't give off the vibe, but I do have love for Big Two, you know, and other company properties that I'd love to draw or write. I had a problem, I think, when I first came out with Scam, kind of reconciling the idea of not being an artist writer, not being an artist writer, being either an artist or a writer, and then doing a lot of stuff with like Jason Cherimella. I got into this swing where he would write something for us, like Scam Zero or a short in Scamthology, and I drew it, and I really realized that if I'm going to get better at either you know, skill, I need to kind of, especially as an artist, I'm not going to do certain things that other people would. Like, Charles can write a script, and I guarantee you I would not see the script the same way, and if I drew that, learning to draw that would make me a better artist. So I think that there's certain things that I have to do to just get better, and I want to get better. So I kind of think that, like, you know, when it came time to think about what's coming next, I planned Scam as a trilogy, you know, so I wrote the first one, then I wrote the second one, then I was kind of tinkering with the third one, and then Scamthology and the Scam Altered Collection came along, and then some other projects that I can't say that are happening next year came along, and I kind of have to balance between being a writer and being an artist. But you know, it gets a little convoluted at times, and keeping the comic tribe ball rolling, even though Tyler is a big, huge bulk of that, in handling the day-to-day stuff. But, I don't know if I have complete say of, like, what I want to do more than the other, but I know when it comes to planning what's coming next, to me, sitting down and writing a script is the most fun, and then trying to twist myself as an artist to do stuff that I normally wouldn't then becomes the next kind of mountain to climb.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I guess through the process of it, because it's a different kind of ringer than I guess what Charles is talking about, because he's got to deal with a lot of different things quickly, but you've sort of got to concentrate on along them. Did you, I mean, even in the process of doing sort of the beginning of Scam to getting to the end, I mean, what kind of growth do you think you've experienced in sort of the way that even you look at creating comics?
Oh, well, just the entire approach to writing. Mm-hmm. I think writing was the bigger thing, because the way I wrote initially was way, I think the stuff that every, you know, beginning writer goes on to, where you're doing way more than you have to, and you're not really allowing a synergy between the words and the pictures. And especially, which is really just absolutely stupid considering I'm the one doing both, I should have been able, I know I could put it in the hands of the other person and get it completely right because I was doing both. So I kind of learned how to just be a better writer and just really let the words do what they have to, but then leave it up to the images. The images are going to be what stick in people's heads. So
sounds like
you
really separate the two processes, as opposed to, I know some guys who are writer artists and they sort of work on the two at the same. I have one friend and he stopped doing it, but he would draw pages one at a time, you know, for a while and like
I
write
used
the story
to,
on that
you know
page.
What? In the first issue, I was writing while I was drawing, mm-hmm. and then Tyler knocked me right out of that habit quick, because he's like, it's slowing you down. You know, he goes, you turn in pages fast. You can be fast. He goes, but you're not doing yourself a favor by rewriting while you're drawing. You know, so now all of a sudden this character is going to be on the left, or it's going to be a down shot or an up shot or whatever. And then, you know, that once I was taken out of the drawing and can just work on a script, it was absolutely freeing and absolutely fun. And I generally think writing a comic or writing period is just one of the most fun things ever, because you could just completely go nuts. And then when I do certain things and then I say, you know, like I drew 500 tanks on a beach. Then when it gets to being an artist, you're like, son of a bitch, why did I say 500? Maybe we'll like 200 or something, you know, like maybe there's a cloud of smoke that covers up some, or you take some cheats. But yeah, I just think it's, you know, there was a big learning curve. But now by the end of it, I feel a million times better than well, I feel it. I don't know if I look it, but I feel a million times better than when I started.
Sometimes when you're talking, I imagine that I can hear the gears in Charles's head right now, as he's working through something else that Wonder Woman is supposed to be doing.
You have Wonder Woman's going away for the moment. It's the next thing I have to think about is She-Hulk. I got a She-Hulk script to do this week. So,
wow.
Anyway,
two strong ladies.
Yeah, strong ladies.
So,
about it.
Joe, do you feel like you're getting, like you've been bogged down in one project for a while, like you'd like to do something else to have a different sort of tone or something like that? Or do you like the idea of sticking with one thing and being really consistent and being in that world and being immersed in that thing?
Yes, I'm all about Scam right now. So as soon as Scam is done, we get the Kickstarter finished and we, you know, hopefully, you know, fund it and take it all out. We had an awesome first day, so we're hoping to build on that momentum. And then once Scam is done, yeah, I'd like to change gears and do a little something else. And then, you know, once you've proven that there's people out there who will check out a property, then you can always go back to it. And you can always, you know, try to do some other stuff. Kind of like what Charles said before, I think there's unbelievable value in dipping into all these different pools and, you know, carrying a fan base from one thing to the other. And I think it's a large part of why creator-owned comics are such a success today, because people see Charles on She-Hulk or on any of his other books, and you know, they jump over and say, oh, this guy did Thunderbolts, oh, I want to see what he does on you know, Red Lanterns or whatever. And it's kind of, you know, people follow creators, I think, more than they ever did. And I don't know if that's just something I'm noticing, but
no, that's right, that's absolutely true. No, I think that's for sure right.
And I feel like as long as you know your brand and you know your, you know, it doesn't mean you should never change gears. I mean, I don't think you could talk about two more different things than, you know, Red Lanterns and, you know, Letter 44 and Superman, Wonder Woman. I mean, dude, you're ridiculous. Like, So the fact that you can switch through all of those different gears and all those different modes is awesome, and I think you should, because, you know...
Well, that's why, I mean, those books are different for a reason. Like, if I was offered, you know, I don't know what it would be, like another...
Charles, do you want
like
to
another
announce
book that was...
Do you want to announce that you're taking over Scam? I really should have said that before.
Yeah. No, this is the right time for that. But like, if I was offered like a political sci-fi book, I'd be like, no, I'm not going to do a political sci-fi book because it covers the same mental real estate that Letter 44 covers. So, you know, that doesn't make any, like, that's silly because I'm cannibalizing my own ideas. But if you take, you know, you look at She-Hulk, which is a book about a, you know, lawyer superhero who happens to be a 7-foot-tall green lady, and Red Lanterns, which is about a bunch of space alien biker rage monsters, like, they're totally radically different. And so that's kind of one of the guiding principles I've had in, as far as taking on new projects. If I feel like I can bring something to it that I'm not already doing in another book, then it makes a lot of sense to me, because then I'm hitting all those different audiences, right? So I hypothetically have 7 different audiences that I can cross-pollinate across. And that's kind of the idea behind it, hopefully. And I, you know, we'll see if it's working, but that's the idea.
Now, I'm going to kind of ask you this, Charles, the same question I asked Joe, but I'm going to turn it the other way around. Do you long for the idea of immersing yourself in one project? I mean, I know that you have in the past, you've worked on sort of singular big projects. You've written a novel, you've sort of been in the one world for a long time. Like, do you long for that, or do you feel like you've trained yourself out of it?
There are some things that I'd like to be doing that I know, like I have the outlines, I have the plan, and I have. It's hard to find the time to do them, and so that is a little frustrating. I'm planning to, you know, right now I'm on 7. I don't intend 7 to last forever because I think it would. I think this workload is really, it's very, very intense to the extent that it's right on the edge of really impacting my life in a not fantastic way. And so, because, you know, as we said, I also still, you know, maintain my law practice and I have, you know, other things going on. So it's, I need to be able to kind of shift things over. So at a certain point, I will do that, but hopefully within that will be an opportunity to work on some of the other things that I have planned to do. So, but I would also think I would be foolish to not take advantage of the opportunity that I've been given to grow my audience, really do good work. So,
what I mean is, like, on a day like today, you've got all the scripts, you're doing a podcast, you're doing everything, you're just like, it'd be nice to get a house and on a beach and then just work on something by itself for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot.
Okay, I'm just curious if, you know, because when you say you've sort of rearranged your brain and everything, like, at a certain point, I wonder it must be difficult to sort of shift and concentrate on one thing like that because you're so used to flitting around, which in itself can sort of generate its own kind of energy, I guess.
No, it sounds phenomenal, and I've thought a lot about, like, taking a writing retreat and going for 5 days to do exactly what you said, basically go to the beach or something like that and just kind of look out at the ocean and work on one thing. But something always comes up, and it's tough to do it. You know, and my equivalent of that tends to be, like, you know, plane flights are that sort of for me. I mean, how terrible is that, right? Like, I consider a plane flight a break.
I agree with you 100%, and I always have. It's the one time nobody can bother you, at least so far.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see when that starts to change with satellite phones or whatever the hell it's going to be. But, you know, like, you take a flight and you're like, all right, I have these 5 hours or these 4 hours or these 2 hours, whatever it is, and I can focus completely on whatever it is. And, you know, the only thing that's a bummer is that, so I was actually in Austin this past weekend, so I flew there and flew back, and so that's, you know, 4 to 6 hours of travel each way. And I remembered very clearly, like, when I used to take those flights, even 5 years ago, like, I thought of a plane flight as, like, a chance to really settle into a good book. And now it's like, awesome, I can really zero in on a script I need to write, which is just, you know, it's just the way life is today, but it's, for me anyway, but it's okay. It's not the end of the world.
Do you think that, and I'm not saying for you, I'm not telling you to, you know, but do you think that that's sustainable for a creator to sort of be at that, you know, I mean, it's possible on one hand that sort of creation can really, really feed your energy, but, you know, is it okay to keep up with that like that for so long? I guess it depends on your temperament.
Yeah, I don't know that it's, I mean, I'm doing okay with it, but I certainly look forward to the point where it relaxes a little bit, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I see this as an opportunity that I should really, that I'm trying to grab onto with both hands and really,
I don't mean to be all about that, but that's bad.
But like to, you know, something like that. Like I just want to make sure that I'm getting as much out of it as I can.
And
really delivering on everything.
I don't mean to make the whole conversation about that, but like I said, it's a really interesting time, and I liken it to being like when a young person's in their 20s going after whatever their career is. You know, that's sort of what it is that guy stays at the office really late and he does all the stuff and goes after it. And there is that part of comics. And you're in part of that, you're in a version of it, and Joe, you're in a different kind of version of it, which I think is interesting. And like, yeah, you almost have to have that. There's no, I feel like in comics today, there's no, well, I'll be done at 4 and then we can just hang out. I mean, I guess you can do that later, but.
I think we've mentioned that. I think Charles is 100% right with a strategy, because he does all this for X amount of years or X amount of time that he does it, and then whenever he can step back, if that's his choice, and wants to do a Kickstarter, do a, you know, creator own, do a, you know, a new book at another company, whatever, just think of the, you know, all the fruits of the labor he's doing now will have blossomed. He worked X amount of years to get these opportunities, seizing everyone, killing everyone, and then at the end of this, you know, hopefully it just means him having a stronger career where his name matters more on the book than the name of the book.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I mean,
Charles, I get you, Charles. I get you, buddy. Okay?
Yeah, you do. You get me. But that's right. That's what I'm trying to do. And it's, but at the same time, I want to make sure that the books are entertaining and great and fun to read and everything the comic should be. You know, that's what any comic creator should hopefully be trying to do is execute whatever vision they want for their books. Like, it, you know, starting to get too mercenary about it, and then all of a sudden, books will suck. There's no doubt about it.
Should you still be having fun with it? I mean, like, how important is that to you? Like, that they're fun? I mean,
man. This is, God, I think I'm sure Joe and I are on exactly the same page about that. Like, we would not be working this hard if this was not a great time, and it which it is. So,
yeah, there should definitely be a doubt. We love making comics. I would feel safe in everyone I've ever met that makes comics, for the most part, that I know of at least, is beyond passionate about making them, you know, and I understand if you're not that passionate, how you don't understand it, it doesn't translate to you, but making comics is absolutely the most fun, rewarding, and exciting thing that I could do. Next to being a parent. Hold on, I don't want to sound like a shitty parent. Take it back. All right, so having kids and then
that's really hard.
It is. It's true. It's true.
One of the things I think is interesting when you talk about that and working really hard and putting your all into it, and I think of Jack Kirby. It's what it makes me think of, and to think that at the end of it, like he always did that, and it was just to stay on that treadmill. And at the end of it, he didn't really have a hell of a lot to show for it, because he didn't know what there was to do other than to keep doing it, which had partially to do with sort of when he grew up and then the world he lived in and the climate of how comics was. And now it's different. You can build something. You can own something. You can have something. And I find that really, really refreshing. I see that as a change. I see that as growth of the industry and of entertainment to a certain extent. But you still have to work just as hard. And you know, not everybody's gonna be Jack Kirby, but at the end, you probably end up better off than him. And I think that's really neat. It's just an essay, really, not a question.
Yeah, it's just a different time. I think that was a different time, and creators are different now, and I think the whole industry is different.
Well, then you know, people have learned from it. You can go that way, and you can own your thing and do whatever. I think before we wrap up here, because we've been talking about working and doing it so hard, I want to ask Charles, what at this point right now, what is your favorite part of the comics making creation? I know, like, at one point when you're new at it, it's like sort of getting your script out and seeing pages come back for the first time or doing something else. Where are you at now? Like, what's your favorite part of sort of the process at this point?
You know, it's interesting, because the part that gives me a thrill every time, and this is going to sound almost cheeseball, but I really like when I have, you know, because I do some outlining beforehand. I talk about issues, like there's this kind of all this build up to when am I going to get the issue done, when I'm going to actually going to script it. And when I, you know, open up Word and I type in, I have a particular way that I put a header on all of my scripts with like the name and my name and so on and so forth. And then I start typing it like page one, panel one, like that. Is actually still, I can feel this kind of like endorphin rush every time, which tells me that I'm making the right choice, because I get excited about the idea of writing a script every single time. So that is great. I also love when I type end, which is how I end my scripts, with the word end, which kind of makes sense, I think, because that feels good too. Like when you know that you've gotten it, you know, you've gone through the sprints and you're finished with it. And then beyond that, like, you know, I mean, you get this whole, like, you know, Joe, I'm sure it's the same way for you, but like Twitter, you know, like the way social media is these days, if you choose to have it, you can have a lot of positive reinforcement almost all day long. And so that's nice too. But I really think the kind of the actual opening the script, starting to write it, knowing that I'm going on that journey, it sounds so cheesy, but it's how I feel about it, is really still one of the greatest things about it.
It's impressive. Because that first part, I avoid that like the dentist. And it's not that it's not that I, ugh, that's that, if I wish I had that feeling. That's I see, it all makes sense to me now if you say something like that. Oh, Joe, what's your part of that process now? What's the favorite thing for you?
There's a lot. I still feel a lot of energy, because right now I'm doing stuff that I am writing, that I'm not writing. I'm doing stuff for other people, so it's kind of an amalgam of different things. But I feel like getting the layout perfect and getting the layout right and really having good dynamic storytelling. I mean, I have more of a cartoonier style as my style's evolving. And like Art Adams is a huge influence and guys like that. So like when I see my layouts, you know, and I send them off and they get approved with vigor and excitement, they're like, oh, yeah, that's really cool. Or I haven't seen this before. I really like that. In a crappy I told you so way, I like doing some layouts that look like they won't work, and then someone being like, all right, go ahead and do them, but if you waste time doing a page, it's on you. And then I send the page in and they're like, well, I'll be damned, that worked. So I like a little bit of that, like gaining confidence in my artistic eye or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to the writing side and the scripting side, is really getting better at playing off characters, sending off the script for edits, and then getting it back with, you know, some good notes, but knowing that it's kind of going in the right direction. Just writing a good scene lately has been like really, really a good feeling, like that I leave off on. And then I don't think there's anything better than seeing the book in your hand and feeling the book in your hand and checking out that finished product. That still kind of gives me goosebumps.
Awesome. Well, that's about all that I've got. I know that everybody else's comments to go make. But I wanted to, I guess, give you guys a chance. Charles, do you think that you could plug your stuff in less than 30, 40 minutes? Or is there anything coming up?
Hilarious.
So sorry. It's a cliche-orama, and I apologize.
Yeah. No, I absolutely can. So I do have some stuff coming up. I think in keeping with the theme of this show or interview, I would encourage people to check out Letter 44, which is the book I'm doing. It's an ongoing series published by Oni Press. It is a kind of sci-fi political series about an incoming president who discovers that the previous president in his administration found aliens in the asteroid belt and covered it up, and kind of he has to deal with all that, and kind of like The West Wing meets Alien. It's a very cool series. So that, you know, could use your support in a way that a Superman book perhaps doesn't. Not that they don't all deserve your support, but I would love if people would check that out. I also had a graphic novel come out this year called Strange Attractors from Archaea. That is about two genius mathematicians who turn all of New York City into sort of a big machine or engine, and then it's about what happens when they turn it on. So those are both books I'm very proud of, and I would love it if people would give those a read. Of course, I'm writing a lot of stuff for DC and Marvel. Swamp Thing, Red Lanterns, and Superman 1-1 for DC, and Thunderbolts, She-Hulk, and in the upcoming Inhuman series for Marvel. So there you go.
I endorse wholeheartedly Strange Attractors and Letter 44. The other books are very good also. We talked about those on our regular podcast. But if you're out there, if you ever listen to me talk about the kinds of books that I like, both of those creator-owned series series and book are fantastic.
Well, thank you very much, Josh.
Your turn, Joe.
I only have one, so I feel like I should talk about other things beforehand.
No,
but
you can go ahead and talk about the one thing.
Yeah,
that's
no, but yeah, I'm going to pick up every book that he just said too, which is annoying. So I'm like, damn it, I'm going to buy every one of those. Yeah, so right now it's pretty much what I've got going on is Scam, the Ultimate Collection, hardcover graphic novel. It's on Kickstarter. It'll be on there for about 38 more days. Go back that. There's a story in it by Mr. Josh Flanagan again. And I've got to say, even though I know this is all about making comics, Charles, if you have an email, I'll send you Josh's story if you'd like to check it out. I got to tell you,
I'm shocked that Josh has not sent me his story.
I really thought
yet.
I had.
That's,
now that he was
disappointing,
just saying,
Josh.
I was going to say, here's the thing. I don't know what Josh does, and I don't even know if he'll leave this in the podcast. I saw Josh at Granite State Comic Con, and I told him we had written to some people, and we had started off with Scamthology. We wanted an anthology of all the characters, and we asked, like, I think, like around 12 or 13 people, and everyone said yes, which I was first shocked about. Secondly, you know, we're getting all these pitches back, and Josh gave his pitch, and we thought it was a little odd for the pairing at first, and Josh fought for it. And I was like, you know what? I really love that he fought for it. Then he wrote the story, and to the credit that Josh has as a writer, he wrote probably the most poignant and fun story in his 8 or 10 pages. I don't know exactly the page count.
Seven.
Five. I know. Like, it was so good. And I said that to Josh in person. I'm like, dude, you really discount yourself for your ability. Because, man, he was on with a character.
It's his fatal flaw, man. Isn't that Flanagan's? I mean, it absolutely is. Like, I don't get it. It's the weirdest thing.
It's unbelievable. Because he wrote a story that was, like I said, so spot on, so fun, so poignant, so well character driven that, I mean, he just nailed it. Like, from the first time out. And Doug Hills, the artist on it, just turned in an amazing story. So I think it's one of the best in the book. And, you know, you're talking to us about all our stuff. You know, you have a short story, and we want to see more. Me and Charles want to take a break. Maybe we'll all rent an island villa in a few years, and we could sit back and have a podcast with you talking about your 20 books that you have out.
Yeah, I will work on that. I am working on it. Actually, I haven't been working on it enough. But one of the reasons that I did this today, because I needed a little motivation, and I want to thank you both in different ways for those kind of things. But I don't like to make these about me very much. Can you talk a little bit about what else is in the book and who else is in the anthology as well? Because it's a pretty great lineup.
Yeah, well, the
you know what? Before you do that, Joe, it was Pint. It was the Pint story, right,
yeah.
Josh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I did read it, and it was fantastic. So,
yeah, it was.
So I agree with Joe. It's great stuff.
Thank you.
Yep. And, you know, it's just, it was great to see it. But, the other people involved, I mean, there's a lot of up-and-coming and already established guys. We got Ben McCool, writer from Pigs and Choker, Joe Eisma, the artist of Morning Glories, Nick Pitara, the artist of Manhattan Projects, Tyler James, who I've said before, from Comics Tribe, John Lees from The Standard from Comics Tribe, Rich Duick, Paul Allure, who's a rising name in comics. If you don't know the name, you will very soon. He's doing a lot of stuff for IDW, Turtles, and G.I. Joe properties. There's a ton. There really is, like, there's, I think, 30 different characters, creators that are involved in it. C.P. Wilson, who I don't know if you guys are familiar with, from Stuff of Legend. And
I'm familiar with basically everybody you said, and that is not all, but, like, I mean, Rick Stewart, like, those are great, great names, so that's going to be a great book.
Yeah, Amy Chu, who just was announced as a writer for the Vertigo Quarterly, she did a story with Charles Paul Wilson, where Charles is known for doing his Pooh variants, and he did an entire Scam Winnie the Pooh type story, which he's never done before. So that's awesome. And then once we get into the other, you know, the pinup gallery and the art, I mean, I have a story in there with Nolan T. Jones, who's a writer and a game website developer, and we have Jason Cherimella and I are doing a prelude to a next Scam series, and prelude to also Scam Zero, which comes out in May. So, I mean, there's just a ton of great people that worked on the book, and I'm very proud of it. And, you know, it's going to be one hell of a collected edition once it's all together.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate the time, and it was very good talking to both of you. And I really appreciate the sort of different approaches to comics, because as people are listening to this, everybody sort of approaches things differently and looks at things differently. And hopefully, this will kickstart. No, I can't believe I said that. But,
well, and by different approach, do you mean successful and unsuccessful? I'm just curious.
No, I mean,
no, come on.
You're at different stages of the game. But as I say, there are, you know, I've met a lot of people who talk about making comics, and you know, 95% of them don't get off the blocks, and then of that, a large segment doesn't finish something, and then some of them finish stuff, and it never gets out there, and there's all sorts of excuses, and I know every one of them. But the fact is, getting the book done is a major accomplishment. Getting that book in anybody's hand is Olympian, and anything after that is gravy, you know, and it all goes after that. So, you know, just one step at a time and get through all those things. But there's at this point, Joe, you've got nothing to be ashamed of, and you've only got, you know, what's in front of you now. So
I think you have to have shame, first of all. So it's okay. I'm good.
I think you have to be pretty goddamn shameless. Have you read Sex Criminals? Anyway. That's all, and I want to thank you guys again, and you can go to ifanboy.com, you can comment on this and see the other stuff that's going on there, and it was good to be back in the interview chair. It was fun.
It was great to be interviewed, Josh, as always. Anytime.
This time we'll say nothing but I told you so.
Memories are times we borrow for spending tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened, because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right, so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.